how to need it.
Call the hearing back to order, gentlemen. Kelly, Mr. Harvey, I presume. For elements, how do you want wish to proceed? Tell us.
I'll give an opening introduction summary, and then Michael will elaborate in the detail.
Happy with that. But Mr. Kelly, just to forewarn you, we have read your summary, but what I would like you to do, please, is take the contextual matters as read, because we're across those, but take us through the suggested the plans you provided and the suggested plan versions you provided in some detail, because we want to make sure that we understand those. So just while Mr. Harvey is doing his thing, if you could ponder how you're going to, do that, but that's our request.
So you would like us to go through Michael to go through the detail of what he's proposing?
Correct.
Yes, rather than the description, which I think you've got on the door.
Yes, he's got detailed plan provisions.
Yeah.
But because we only got this material last night, we want to make sure that we understand it. But Mr. Harvey, well, Mr. Kelly's collecting his thoughts. you can proceed as I say. We have read your opening remarks, so I think that what I'd ask you to do is highlight the things that you want to make us to particularly take on board before we hear Mr. Kelly's planning assessment.
Okay. Do I need to go through the introduction? I presume you're aware that we own Lake Station. I've got a broad background in agriculture and Massey Council, and I chair Hobbit, involved in tourism, also with the chairman of Hobbiton. Lake Mackay is a decent bit of property, as you're probably aware, and therefore we are concerned about this as part of the planning process. The particular areas, we've made a list of concerns there. We've had a problem with these SNAs since they were originally proposed, mainly because the property is cut up with these large valleys, gorges through it, and they necessitate having sizeable tracks or roads through them, and that creates this problem. Obviously, SNAs result a loss of potential grazing area, and that's an economic effect on us. And the location of the ONL line obviously has a significant impact on future land use. I'll just expand on that. So the planning process, we have seen Lake Mackay has, since I've bought it, we've had a process, a plan of improvement, which includes irrigation, animal breeding, pasture improvement. We've changed the type of sheep from being essentially a dryland merino to an intensive, what we call Wairua merino, which is a special bred half-bred, which is resulting in increasing our lambing crop. So we now have 150% lambing from 80% when we had merinos, and we also produce what we call a smart wool contract, which is a particular 22 to 25 micron wool, which is maintain the value of the wool. But that requires changes in not only in breeding but also in land use. And as you probably notice because you drive past it, the enormous amount of irrigated land and feed that is growing on that type of land. We've seen the district planning process as being, therefore, as being part of planning the overall plan of the development of the station, and which is to integrate more than just what we want to do with the land, but also reserve areas, which we've talked about in cooperation with the Department of Conservation, and they have an interest in taking some of those reserve areas, public access, and also residential development. Residential development is a way of spreading our cost with the taking more of the SMAs out of farming. So, but also we're concerned about just the whole pest management of the creation of those SMAs. Speaking specifically about the definition of SMAs, the real area of concern, I think, has been the lack of consultation, and I've raised this last time and I continue to bash on it, because really, yes, there was a process outlined in Environment Court, there was a process put to us by council. That process has never been followed. In fact, I've never talked to a council person about the definition of these SNAs, which are which cut into critical roadways that affect the operation of the farm. I won't dwell on it further, but Mike will expand on detail in terms of where that affects. Also, SMAs create a residual for pests. The actual our pest control bill, if you took the rates relief that's proposed, it doesn't cover a tenth of what we spend on pest control. Our pest control bill is in the hundreds of thousands. It's a massive liability just for the farming land, and SMAs just create further residual for pests, which are onerous on us as landowners to control. If you just go walk around the SMAs and you'll see the rabbit numbers are just gigantic on those areas. Obviously, the O&L line is something that I think needs considerable debate. It's obvious from the submissions from landscape architects, it almost depends where they're standing on which road as to where they want to define it. There appears to be no real objective basis for it. It's quite subjective. I think there needs to be a lot more thought and discussion between landscape architects and landowners on where that line's placed. Also, it's got to have some relativity to what happens in our nearby council, county, where they have a line that's considerably higher than any of the ones proposed. Lastly, I'd just like to dwell on this submission that's just lately coming on dwelling capacity. One of the issues of this is you can't, I use the expression, Soviet planners ignored the brick queues. I believe Craig Barr and Mike Osborne have ignored the people sleeping in cars and on beaches in Wanaka over the Christmas period. The whole basis of this community has a massive seasonal element to it, and capacity considerations that don't consider that seasonal element are really not doing us any justice. We have a lot of holiday homes, but we also have an enormous demand for them because a lot of people come in here for a very short period of time. Unless you take that into consideration, it's really a waste of time. In my opinion, based on forecasting for everything from movie parks to hundreds of products released on the market, really the free market is the only way to work and would meet supply and demand. Attempts to try and forecast capacity like these gentlemen are trying to do, a question that's going to be wrong, it's just a question by how much. And we are seeing that capacity planning and economic problems today, which is probably one of the biggest single economic problems, land use, that land definition and availability that's facing our communities, and particularly this community at this time. So it's not a question of how right you get it, but how wrong you get it. And I would urge you to let the market rule that. As developers, we're not going to develop land unless we can sell it. So I think it's a matter of letting the market rule rather than creating a process that creates more problems than you solve. Okay, so Mike.
Before you go on, I think we'll take any questions that the panel have for you. We're hearing from Mike, so we have a little bit more time to think about.
Morning, Mr. Harvey.
Morning.
First of all, I'm not a farmer. I'm just interested in your lambing percentages. How do you get to 150? Is that
a lot of twins?
Yeah, a lot of twins. Yeah, well, it's yes, a lot of twins. Romney breeders have for many years been doing what we call a group breeding schemes, where they collect the elite animals in the small stud and then share them back out, so that they've lifted their lambing percentages to 170%. And so we've taken that genetic stock from Wairu, Romney and Wairapa, and crossed it with Marina, and then selected within that, and achieved that. It's an interesting exercise. Yeah.
Thank you for that. And in the next paragraph, I wasn't sure when to ask you or Mr. Kelly about this, but you're talking about reserve areas and being offered to DOC, and you've got some documentation from DOC that supports that in principle. Do I understand that element, along with the others, that they're all part of what is sought by way of permission? So
yes,
it's not one without the other.
We're putting up a total plan. Yes.
It is a
total plan. Yes.
You haven't mentioned, maybe I need to ask Mr. Kelly, but there's a mention that in relation to the Atkins Road area of land, there was mention of agreement in principle from NZTA to any increase in traffic would have been agreed in principle by NZTA. Is that something I should be asking you, Mr. Kelly, as opposed to?
Yes, I think Mike's the expert on that. He works for them as well.
I'll leave that for now. And then a couple of other things. In talking in paragraph 12, I'm just interested in your comments about meeting the demand for accommodation.
There's an element of suggestions in Craig Bowers and Mark Altman's evidence that you should be capacity planning. That's been done before. We can see the effect of it in the marketplace right now. It's been a disaster. I would suggest that developers are not going to develop land unless they have the opportunity to sell it. So and that's a market rule type approach, which is how the rest of our economy works. And it should work for landforms. I can't see any difference.
Your proposal is for rural lifestyle, would you see any accommodation offered as part of your development proposal actually?
Well, I think that
partly addressing the sort of issue that
Atkins Road development very definitely can be a relatively high density type development from the point of view of Lagos. But the other ones, it's more of a broader submission in that people come to this area. There is a lot of part-time dwellers, as people who want to own land here just for the enjoyment of the area. They don't necessarily want to live here full-time. And I can see that demand continuing to grow, greater than what's been forecast. It's one of those things that it occurs. If we have a buoyant economy, people want to enjoy lifestyle, and that's an automatic thing that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yes, one of the things that I suppose I'm struggling with a little is that it appears to be a situation where provide the opportunity and people will take it up. Mm-hmm. So there doesn't seem to be any way at the moment of actually quantifying what the demand for residential dwellings might be. What's your view?
Is the market rules. If people want to come here and have lifestyle blocks, then that's what we're about. Let's welcome them. That's part of lifestyle in New Zealand. That's part of what we're about. People owning second homes or lifestyle dwellings is a legitimate way of expanding your lifestyle. I own three properties. I have beach property, I have a farm, I have a property in Auckland. There's nothing wrong with that. I think that's part of enjoying life. Let's get on with it.
Sure. Thank you.
Now, question for Harvey, as regards SNAs, you said that in an interim period there should be further consultation between expert advisors. And the difficulty that we have is that we have to make recommendations from the council here and now based on the expert evidence that's before us about where the SNAs should be drawn. And so at the moment, Mr. Kelly's, I'm going to discuss with Mr. Kelly his planning argument, but at the moment the council's expert ecologist's view is the only game in town. So to where that puts us in a bit of a cleft stick, sort of thinking, well, how could we respond to your submission when we're here, we've got to make a call on what's been put before us.
Yes, and I'd urge you to listen to what Mike has to say from you know, how we don't consider it that much a difficult job to take the farm roads out. We have actually, one of them doesn't include the farm roads anyway already. A definition has been made. But I would urge you to give it consideration, because I believe the process has been flawed with the lack of consultation. The Environment Court recommendations haven't been followed. That makes this planning process challengeable in a legal sense, and that could happen, and therefore the plan becomes ineffective almost.
Would you prefer us to recommend to the council that it withdraws what it's proposed for your land and start again from scratch?
I would, yeah.
Because that could lead you to the same place 2 years from now.
Well,
being consulted, but with council staff still recommending what they're recommending now.
I'm not sure. I'm almost certain once you actually start defining it, you'd leave the roads out. So I'm quite confident of that. Mm. But however, the point you make is valid.
Could I just follow up on that from your point of view as the landowner and the what you see as the process that you have to go through, Mr. Hayek, with regard to your tracks? Is it the issue partly to do with the process itself, and is there any way that you can see for refining that and
the process put up by the Environment Court and represented to us by council should have involved with a process of consultation, and that hasn't occurred, yes.
Well, and you've talked about the consultation, but where there isn't SNA, whether your farm track is within it or not, if you need a consent, is the problem with the consent process and the...
Yes, the problem is the cost and also the, you know, I mean, this is not just an issue of tracks, it's also tracks that have an issue of occupational health and safety in terms of farms where they need repairs. Now, if we have to go through a process to repair a track, now that could endanger people's lives. You know, I mean, this is not just a simple matter of jumping up and down. You know, they are essential aspects of the operation of the farm. Their good form and keeping them in good order is both a question of commercial activity, but it's also a question of providing a safe and good and working environment for my people.
I will ask you to hand over to Mr. Kelly, and you look like hospital pass.
Okay.
Well, actually, having said that, I do have one question for either of you to answer. Mr. Kelly took us uphill and down dale of LNS, which is very interesting. Down on the flat, do you have any land on the Clutha side of the state highway? Do you extend over those flats, or is it all on the hillside of the state highway?
It's all on the hillside of the Clutha. Yeah.
Thank you.
Of the Clutha, between the highway and Clutha.
The big river block.
The big river block is between Shortcut Road and the Clutha. Yeah.
Oh. So the south end of the airport, there's a flat with two pivot irrigators on it.
Yeah, big.
That's Leighton Price Station as well.
Yes, because I've said, as you'd appreciate, driving up and down the road, the reason for my question is that I've seen a subway that says...
Yes, yeah, that connects the main part of the farm with that river flat.
So there's a...
There's 135 hectares under pivot irrigation. Which includes one small SNA, which is not that contingent.
Thank you. Mr. Kelly.
You'll appreciate that with 400 hectares of SNAs, it's a major size of a small farm, the size of a farm.
So, Mr. Kelly, you have the floor.
All right. Thanks. So, with for my presentation, then we'll take the first three paragraphs as read. So the first part of the presentation is about the SNAs. We go to paragraph 4. The requested amendment to the boundaries of the SNAs to allow corridors for existing farm roads. And initially we requested sections of the SNAs to be taken out. That was the parts that include the roads. Colin now has accepted that the SNAs are okay how they are, and it's just the road corridors that we're asking to come out. Now, just relating to the question you had before was, where is the ecological reason to do this? I consider that, do you need an ecologist to say, here's a road, we want to take this part out? Because we're not talking about a part of the SNA that doesn't have as good ecological values as another part. We're just saying, here's a road that was here before that SNA was designated on a map. Can't we take this out with a corridor, a 20 metre wide corridor? So that's the reason why we haven't presented or had an ecologist present basically that, because we're not talking about the ecological values of that road corridor. We're just talking about it being a road and something, a section of ground that might have to be upgraded in the future.
Question, Kelly, you refer to the Forest and Burke case, and I asked the hearing administrator to forward that to you.
Yes.
Because calling a spade a spade, when I read that, I thought to myself that that was virtually conclusive that we couldn't accommodate your submission, and I wanted you to have the opportunity to tell me why that's not right. But so that's the process, because the High Court said identifying SNAs is purely an ecological exercise for ecologists, and we are mere toilers at the bottom end of the judicial hierarchy. So we're thinking, well, the High Court's telling us this. We can't not do what the High Court's telling us. So am I misreading the case? And so I'm giving you the opportunity to tell me why I'm wrong.
Right. Yeah,
I would suggest the reason the ecologists are misled is they haven't consulted. It's as simple as that.
Ms. Robinson's talking more about this case that says an SNA is defined by a special ecology in that area, and then what's happening on the farm below that can only not change that area but change how you might manage that area. Is that correct?
That's correct. And one of the things about the way the hearing has been divided up is that this panel is in charge of mapping where things are on the planning maps, and a different panel is in charge of the rules that govern what happens in SNAs as mapped, which is the Chapter 33 panel. and which is that hearing has already occurred. So the question is, did you make submissions to that panel?
Yes. Yeah. And we went to the hearing and stated the same case.
I suppose what I would say to it is that's a good thing, because my reading of that High Court case is that is the only option you have to get what you want, that we can't accommodate your problem by redrawing the SNA in the absence of ecological evidence that it doesn't meet the required standards. So, as I say, I've read that High Court decision wrongly, then you need to tell me why that is.
No, I agree. I had the same interpretation, but then I thought back to that decision came out in the first week of May. But the consultation on these SNA areas started 3 years ago, I think. And that's why I included that letter, because that's how the SNAs are presented to the landowner, saying, here's what we think is a special ecological area, we want to come and talk to you about it. And so, is that process... Yeah. Well, that was pretty much how I thought of it. Are we still in that process where the landowner is asking for this tract to come out, or is it actually the ECNA is in place and now we're no longer in that phase? That was pretty much the context of what I had in my presentation here.
One of the beauties of this process is that we get to ask questions. I think that what you're putting to me is that, turning it around, that your submission is that you should be still in the consultation phase rather than in a termination phase. Is that the bottom line?
Yes. Yeah, and the precedent that is already there with the Tin Hut Creek SNA that has two roads excluded from it, like it already has a corridor through it. So I don't see where an ecological argument would go to say that you can't do that. That's our main point there.
Mr. Kelly, having not had the benefit of being involved in the earlier hearings, I don't know what the nature of your submission was to that aspect, but I just wondered whether in dealing with this SNA issue you did seek some alternative methods in the district plan that might have made it easier for LMS to manage farm roads.
When we presented at that hearing, that was when the minute after that hearing, the minute was issued saying that where there is not agreement about SNAs, then the council ecologists should get in touch with the landowner and carry on discussion. And so that's what happened after the May 2016 hearing. And then Mr. Barr and Mr. Davis did make the site visit, but unfortunately Colin couldn't attend there.
What I was really sort of asking is, assuming that the SNAs are confirmed with farm tracks through them, is there a method in the plan, in other provisions of the plan, that you have sought be amended to make it easier to administer? Have you sought for example, an exemption from an SNA for...
Well, we've tried to change the rules at one stage.
Yeah, have you tried to change the rules?
Yes.
That's another bit. Just wondering what your options
Not
are. It's part of the Section 32 sort of consideration.
No, we haven't for SNAs.
We didn't really talk about the rules.
And that was... At the hearing in 2016, we raised the issue of how the rules in chapter 33 on what you could clear or not clear were hard to understand. And Mr. Barr actually clarified those since.
But they're not, they don't allow for really adequate track maintenance now. The very narrow, the track's quite narrowly defined. What did they say, 10 metres, wasn't it? What was it?
50 metres. You're allowed to clear 50 metres square under the current rules.
But also the width, that's so the width of the track.
No, it wasn't defined.
Okay, so you
the answer
did look
to that
at that.
Is no.
Yeah. And what about the actual consent process? Did you look at that at all? Whether something is a controlled activity or what the information requirements are. I'm just trying to get a feel for the efficiency and effectiveness and the costs.
I see what you mean there. Our view was that any having to apply for a consent was what we were trying to avoid. So
that was your starting point.
To take the roads, take a corridor.
Okay.
For the road and take it out of the ECNA.
Yeah. So that was a starting point, that they wanted to avoid going through a consent process, and that clearly stated in your evidence there are needed expert advice, there were costs, and there's a time cost as well, and the financial cost of doing all of that.
Yes.
So did you then look at if the worst case scenario was that some form of consent was needed, whether there was any scope for, was this part of your submission at all, whether there was any scope for changing the rules to simplify the process or facilitate farm operations?
No, we didn't. So I didn't think it was worth having to have a separate provision in the plan.
Okay, it's just helpful to understand the wider picture. So,
okay.
Yeah, really get that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's crack on, Kelly.
Okay.
Since we diverted you.
I'm just thinking, is this a good method anyway, in that if we just take it, we've got four sections basically.
Yes, I think that's right.
We take it that a lot of it's red.
Yes, and we'll just do it section by section.
Can discuss as we go?
Yes.
If you're
happy for us to interrupt you, since we've already done it, well, then we'll do it that way. So.
Yeah, no, I'm happy with that. As in we're going to have an hour as well. So, the next one was the Atkins Road Rural Residential Zone, and the main issue with this is
before you go forward, I have been saving my questions for the end, and without bridging through any of the discussion that's been had on SNAs, I wanted to ask you two questions. The first is, I've been on a few farms, nowhere near as many as folks down there tend to be. I can't recall being on a 20-metre wide farm track. So are we talking about recognising existing tracks or providing for future roads?
Providing for future roads.
Right. So is it correct to describe them as farm roads or farm tracks and to characterise the evidence as recognising them, or is it about saying this is about a future development opportunity? This is to you as a planner now.
Okay,
so you're getting this.
Yep. Fair enough question, because I thought about that. I know that normally a road corridor in a subdivision is only 10 metres in a rural area, but you can see the steepness of those slopes.
Yep.
Now, if you have to cut back
into
those, and that one we drove down had those sharp turns, then you would extend into a 20 metres.
So would you be agreeable when we're digesting your evidence and reaching views, where you've described frequently that this is about protecting existing farm roads, that we also add the words and future-proof future access. Is that a fair or more accurate description?
Because that's the reason, isn't it?
One of those tracks you went down had a massive irrigation pipe buried in the middle of it. And there will be other.
No, look, that's fine. We need to be consistent, because if we find another submission where someone has said they'd like a farm track protected, we then say, do we need to make that 20 metres too? So in terms of this issue you've been discussing with the other commissioners about ecology and the process for setting up an SNA, I've had section 6 of the Act open on my laptop here. And notwithstanding the question of who's an ecologist and that side of things, when I look at 6A, which talks about the preservation and protection of the natural character of the coastal environment, that clause includes the phrase from inappropriate subdivision use and development. And so clearly there's a contemplation that there might be some subdivision use or development that is appropriate. And when I do the same consideration of the protection of outstanding natural features and landscapes, it also has that same clause from inappropriate subdivision use and development. And we can take from that that maybe the law contemplates things like farm tracks could be an appropriate thing to have inside an ONL or an OEM. Historic heritage is the same, inappropriate subdivision use and development. When the Act talks about SNAs, it just says protect them. It doesn't say anything about what might be appropriate, like farm tracks inside them. Okay, you don't have section 6 of the RMA with you, I reckon, but based on your knowledge of it, would you agree that I've fairly summed up what the Act says?
Yes, and that has comes back to my reasoning really is to say I don't want to go into a debate about what would be appropriate or not appropriate.
They shouldn't be inside the SNA.
Why we're
seems to me that would be the only remedy that would be consistent with Section 6, rather than having them cutting as part of an SNA, that the SNA would effectively have to be separated into.
Yes.
Sub-SNAs, if you like, separated by the road. So I want to be clear, I understand that we're on the same page there.
Yeah. Okay, that's really the reason why we're pretty adamant that they should come out of it as a corridor rather than try and have rules or
provisions. I understand all that. Thank you. Sorry for
that. No, now we'll talk about Atkins Road, please.
Okay. Atkins Road, we've sent in two plans there. Initially, first plan A, it was the size of 17 hectares, and we included two building restriction areas. And I'll talk about plan A, that's that one, but where the RZ is pink colour. So we considered that more and then thought, well, we don't need to have building restriction areas, at least kind of regulations that have to go into the plan, try and keep it simple. So we thought that area should just stay as rural area. And then the same for the area to the south, on either side of Lugget Creek. That's proposed to be a recreation reserve, and it's better to exclude that from what we're then asking for to be as a rural residential zone. So on the second plan, Appendix 2, Plan B, as we've highlighted the area that for the Atkins Road rural residential zone is yellow. And in the council report, Mr. Barr's report, he has recommended just the higher terrace, and that's the red crosshatch within the yellow. Now, that's probably our main issue there, is that we'd like to see that whole area included. It has no ecological value, currently no indigenous vegetation on it, so there is no issue there. The landscape architecture report said they didn't think there was a problem with housing developments on either of the terraces, but then Ms. Barr's report recommended just the terrace, the higher terrace. So,
well,
main issue.
We'll take questions on that, Mr.
Carson. Mr. Kennedy, what's the background to offering the recreation reserve?
Oh, it's a. Sorry.
Oh, whichever one of you.
It's a flooded area.
Okay. So if that the red hatch area that's recommended by Mr. Barr, that's also in the flood plain.
Yes, it does. So that's a bit of a lower terrace. Where I haven't coloured it in yellow, it's in a lower area, and again, we've kind of taken that out of the area that we were applying for.
And the area that's identified as a recreation reserve seems to go over, in Kingham Road, it goes over some existing properties. Is that right?
That property there is a farm manager's house. Oh, sorry, Kingham Road.
Kingham Road, yeah.
That's a drafting mistake.
Alright, for the sake of good order, can we ask you to give us a replacement plan? Like, because it's important that if we put this, part of it is at the end result.
The whole thing that's moved south.
That's what the problem is.
The templates that say the top is moved. The templates moved about a half an inch down the page.
So,
yes.
I understand it's in your art, but because at the end of the process we have to recommend actual changes to the maps.
We'll give you a replacement.
Can you give us a replacement?
Yes.
Yeah. Apologies there, I only just noticed that.
Well spotted, Commissioner.
I know, it seems like it was this one that drew my attention, because that should be up to there. The one at the top, the one further up, the yellow up the top of the page should be on the boundary, not further down, so that the acid, you put an acetate on there, isn't it? It's moved.
Any other questions, Commissioner? Commissioner McLeod, anything on Atkins Road?
The one question, just thinking in the future, obviously, that recognise your comments about housing, affordable housing, and this is potentially an area that would meet that. Is there an expectation? I know you've said that on site water waste disposal would be set to tank. But is there an expectation that this would eventually become part of the Greater Luggett Township? Does it potentially be connected to?
Yeah. And so we talked to council engineers about that, and they advised that their idea now is to put a pipeline in from Luggett through to Wanaka Airport to join up the Project Pure Works. And when that goes in, the idea would be that the houses in this subdivision would disconnect and join into the Project Pure. But they couldn't give a time frame on when that might go through.
So just from the perspective of a future purchaser, you'd be expected to clear in a septic tank. And I know that council's expectation would probably be to connect. Because there's quite a lot of people in Luggett that are connected to the septic tanks. That does seem to be a bit of a double whammy, isn't it? Putting in a septic tank and then having it connected.
And council engineer advised that too. They said quite often there is a problem with these sort of subdivisions where you don't set the tank first. There is always with problem with landowners being upset about that double whammy, but what is the option when we don't know what the time frame is to get that other pipeline in to Project Pure? Would Colin wait for that to happen, or
could have taken
this? Yeah,
I have known subdivisions. Well, part of one Lang's Beach in Northland, where they literally took it away by truck until the sewerage happened, and that collapsed.
I'm not for a moment suggesting taking it long drops that we afford to lose.
No, they actually collected it in a central location and then took it away.
Probably the only thing to avoid that somewhat would be that it's a condition on the consent to say that when a scheme is constructed for Luggett, then you have to join into it. And so then at least the purchaser is aware that that's a cost, a future cost.
And the just the water that you're proposing to use, I mean, obviously that's consented and portable, and that's something that you're dealing with, the extraction between the OIC, I'm assuming.
Yeah, that's a step for the for subdivision planning later on.
Yeah, but
that's just water from the spring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, that's fine. Thanks.
Professional writing for all right. Area one.
Just to follow up on the question I asked earlier, Mr. Harvey, and he said to ask you, in paragraph 18 you're talking about NZTA having given approval in principle for the use of Atkins Road State Highway 6 intersection for the proposed residential zone. So I just wondered whether they've actually done that in writing or whether it's the
Yes, it's in writing to be in principle. And that's their usual form of consultation, and that, that'll be their first response until there is actually a consent, reverse consent application to subdivide. And then it becomes, they can either confirm or ask for conditions.
Thank
you. Right. For the sake of good order, when you give us your replacement plan, we have a copy of NZTA approval, and when would be reasonable for you to give it that to us? You tell us how long that will take you. We're here for another couple of weeks, so we're not time sensitive, but I want to know when I can expect it to roll in the door.
When you need a replacement. Oh, we should be able to do that tomorrow.
All right. Give me a safety margin. 5 o'clock next Wednesday?
Okay,
we'll accept that. Thank you.
So now, area one.
Hectare area located next to the Lugget Gorge SNA. Now, the idea for this area was to have only 20 lots is what we're restricting this one to, and that the lots would be created in amongst those rocky tours and the indigenous vegetation that is still up there. So the plan that shows that the idea of the subdivision was this one that was attached in Appendix 3. Now on the when it gets to the panel, can you still make out the white areas for those for the 20 lot subdivision?
It's relatively thin.
Next task for you, Mr. Kelly. Can you please have another go at applying a different colour that we can see more clearly and put around it the overall size of the area one? Because I can,
yes,
I can make them out, but I don't see it.
So I took it that not to represent what we already have sent in at other times. So like this map here that was with our original submission,
yes.
Has the 100 hectares of area one delineated on it. I mean, I can overlay it on this plan for sure, but
So you're saying that the one in the original submission is clearer?
It's clearer to show the whole area, but this is just an example of how the subdivision may be laid out.
Yeah, that's. I don't think we need any.
Okay. Could we just have a clearer version of this with the, so that we can...
Yes.
So see, as I say, it may be a different colour that stands out more against the landscape.
Okay. Down to paragraph 23. So the council report states that the development would be better promoted by resource consent with conditions of consent for controlling the built form and managing the indigenous vegetation. However, we note that the rural zone has policy that is not in favour of rural residential development, and we envisage that obtaining a consent for a residential subdivision such as this one would be difficult in the rural zone under the PDP, particularly if the land is rated as ONL. A rural lifestyle zone with appropriate provisions would be more enabling and should be able to maintain visual amenity values. And hence the provisions that are recommended that are in Appendix 4 is how we think this subdivision can, could go ahead as a rural lifestyle zone in the PDP. So the specific provisions recommended will limit the number of allotments to 20 and require that the subdivision design, location of building platforms and mitigation measures to go with that. They will ensure that the built form and associated activities are not visible from any public places in the Upper Cooper Valley. Paragraph 26, I'm just making this point that Mr. Davis advised that rural lifestyle activity could be achieved with a minor effect on the ecology of the site, but then pointed out a detailed application setting out the required areas of vegetation clearance, ecological enhancement, restoration activities would need to be provided to allow an accurate assessment of the ecological effects. And hence one of the provisions that I've recommended relates to Mr. Davis's request there, or Mr. Davis's advice. But as noted earlier, the theme for these rural lifestyle developments is to promote living in an environment where there is indigenous vegetation and iconic Otago landscapes. Hence, the emphasis for the subdivision development will be to protect and enhance the remnant indigenous vegetation. And we consider that an assessment of the ecological values of each site and the effects of the proposed development is appropriate at the time of subdivision. And so that's included as a provision. Access to this area, there are three options identified for access to Area 1. One is the one that you drove up on your site visit, and the other two come across the neighbouring property, the Cripple Station. One is by paper road that wouldn't need an easement, but our preferred access is to come off Smith's Road, so Mount Barker Road, Smith's Road, and then through a farm track across Cripple Station, and that's an easement that is still under consultation.
When we did our site visit to Cripple Station, we went to the end of the Mount Barker Road, and we went to the end of Smith's Road, and,
yes.
and we think that we could figure out probably where you would go. Basically straight up.
There is a formal access agreed between us at present, you know, like that.
Yeah. So, because when we stood on Area 1, Mr. Kelly pointed out the water race, and when we went down the fire a couple of days later, we stood next to the water race looking in the opposite direction. So I didn't know where you went.
All right. Yeah, so that's the favoured access, but, yeah, so as yet, easements aren't sorted. So, would you... Would you like to go through those provisions?
I think that that one.
You referred to at the end of paragraph 26, the recommended provisions of chapter 27. So is that what we're talking about? Because
yep.
I did have some questions about that before we move on.
Yes, but would you like to go through those provisions, or do we just want to have questions on
the ones that are attached?
Yes.
Yes.
If you start with outlining how you see them as working, because yes, I did have some questions about that. Commissioner Monroe probably does too.
Okay. So I saw a precedent in the plan with the Waiena Rural Lifestyle Zone up near Glenorchy, and that's a very similar rural lifestyle zone as what we're promoting here, and the conditions or the provisions that are in the plan for that are also very similar. So I took those as a base, and then I added as I went for this specific area. Okay, so the first objective to go in the plan there was to enable rural living developments in a way that maintains the visual amenity values that are experienced from public places in the Upper Clutha Valley. Policies for that: the subdivision design, identification of building platforms, associated mitigation methods ensure that built form and associated activities within the zone are reasonably inconspicuous when viewed from places in the Upper Clutha Valley. When I was considering these provisions, Area 1, the development that I believe in that area could be constructed so it's not visible from the Upper Clutha Valley, but this submission that we've made is for three zones, so I had to blend these provisions in so that they covered the three zones, Area 1, 3 and 4. And so there it became, as in not visible, it became reasonably inconspicuous when viewed from public places.
And my recollection is that that's the assessment criteria in the ODP for new activities in ONLs, reasonably hard to see, I think it is, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, that's right, that's where it comes from.
Mr. Kelly, before you go on to the details, what I couldn't quite get was you've got an objective and then you've got a number of policies that are very specific and they refer to a plan. So where does the plan fit? And if this is your suggested zone provisions, you've got a whole lot of references to different areas and to what are essentially subdivision design elements that would happen. There is a presumption there, I think, that there is a design that's to which these policies refer. And are they policies or are they rules?
I see. These are policies that they would refer to the planning maps, so that's where the rural living zones would be.
Yes, so they're very busy identified on the maps.
Yeah, yeah. And there they would be called Lake McFire Station, Area 1, Area 3, Area 4, etc. And then, yeah, those policies would relate to how or what a subdivision consent has to be formed around.
Yeah, so when I was suggesting that some look like rules, for example, the maximum height of buildings should be 6 metres above ground level prior to any subdivision development.
Yes, and that comes through to a rule we've recommended in Chapter 22. So that's the policy. And then over the page you see in Chapter 22, recommended in the standards section of Chapter 22, that becomes one of the standards. So that would be for all three areas. Now, I'm kind of following the what has been set up in the plan already with the Waiuna one as a model, and so maybe that's not quite the way to write the policy and then the rule into the plan.
My recollection is that way the zone's been rolled over into the PDP, hasn't it?
Yes.
Unchanged, as I recall.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. Yeah, so that, I mean, that's the reason really to follow that, the way that was set out.
Right, so you were going to take us through...
Yeah, so then a subdivision consent then would have to observe these policies, and that's so the number of allotments in Area 1 would be 20. In Area 3, because it's a 6-hectare area, so an average 2 hectares. And in Area 4, a maximum of 12. Prohibiting the development over the sensitive areas of the zone via the building restriction areas, and so those building restriction areas are shown on the plan map, PDP plan maps. Appropriately locating buildings within the zone, including restrictions on future building bulk. Using mounding and indigenous vegetation to assist with visual screening and development, maximum height of buildings. Do you want me to carry on through the policies like that, or do you?
Well, I don't think we need to. We can take them as read to highlight the basic principles behind them and how they fit. And you've done that in your comments about the using the Waiuna model.
Look, I'd probably prefer that we just start asking questions about them rather than you effectively reading them, because they're pretty clear.
Yeah.
And so to that end, and I hope you can appreciate, we need to be pretty forensic in understanding how plan provisions would work. There are a number of submissions that have sought that subdivision should be a controlled activity. And if a controlled activity that can't be refused can enter 50 lots in Area 1, how would the council deal with that in the absence of a rule somewhere in the plan that expressly separated Area 1 and subjected it to something different?
Would that controlled activity be in the rural lifestyle?
So let's just say there's a whole bunch of submissions that have asked for subdivision generally to be a controlled activity. So let's assume that the context within which this policy would apply might be a controlled activity subdivision. How, in the context of a controlled activity subdivision for, say, 40 lots that had to be granted, in the absence of any rules and just with the policy provided, do you think we could do anything about that? Or would that be a situation where we might need to think about something additional to your policy?
I'd think there'd have to be a provision underneath that one that said that was a control that would have to refer back to these policies.
And so following on from that, if subdivision was a restricted discretionary activity, and my internet connection just isn't working today, so I haven't been able to look up the zone provisions myself. Is there an existing or proposed restriction of discretion that would then allow the council to come back and consider this policy?
Not currently, but I believe that's the section on specific location areas that would be restricted.
So basically, unless subdivision was a discretionary or non-complying activity, there'd need to be, in either a controlled or a restricted discretionary subdivision scenario, some fish hook back to this matter.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. When you talk 1, 2, 3, 4... The fifth bullet, The policy mentioned bulk, but you've only got a height rule, so would it just be, is it really just it's restrictions on future building height? Is that really what's intended, or do you envisage some other process of managing bulk more generally?
No, it's on building height there, and the other ones on bulk would be the standard conditions that are, because they also apply to the area.
Now, chapter 27 is the subdivision chapter. Is one?
Yes.
Is it appropriate to put a policy talking about buildings that might not be proposed at a subdivision stage in a subdivision chapter?
Once again, I was following the same model for Wayne.
Okay. Well, can't fault it for that. If we were to, this issue of the road access, if we were to find ourselves in a situation where we felt unable to grant the relief sought for those roads through the SNAs as to the earlier discussion, and then we're left in the position of considering areas that we're not sure have any feasible access, would we still be in a position to approve those zones? Or do you think the determination on the access and track through the SNA becomes a kind of stop-go gateway for this and or other areas proposed?
So only one of the access options to Area 1 goes through the SNA.
There's two others.
That's the one we drove up, yeah. And that's so two.
So this area could in theory be supported on the premise that there might be access that doesn't require that.
The preferred access is through the
administration. Okay, thank you. I've got no other questions on that particular policy. Shall I carry on, Mr. Chair, or shall we do this as a group line by line exercise type thing in terms of the second?
Why don't you swing with it?
All right, then. Look, the same question Commissioner Hudson asked you, I have in particular for the third policy that talks about methods to remove or kill wilding trees, etc., and whether or not their assessment matters, or they're linked to rules, or should link to rules, or whether you just see this as about through some process of discretion or consideration of the subdivision consent.
So this is the third policy?
This is 27.7.x.3 and the three bullet points.
Yeah. Once again, following the Wayne model.
Yeah, okay. The way the policy is structured, there's a full stop after the text. And then there's these three bullet points. So I don't actually know whether the three bullet points are advice notes or they... You know, should there be something at the end of the policy that...
Like a semicolon.
That in some way references what the three bullet points actually are?
Can I respectfully suggest, Commissioner, that's a train-spotting point.
Okay.
Fair enough, mate. I think they would be... They actually are part of the policy.
Yeah, okay.
In the commas.
And likewise on policy 4, the policy then starts talking about the need to obtain written approval from Queensland Airport Corporation. A policy might say you need to get written approval, but normally there'd be a rule that said if you don't have written approval, then X. And so I'm just wondering, again, if it's a case of that's just the phrasing that you borrowed from a previous zone, I can understand that, but it feels like this policy is simultaneously a method.
It is, as in, when you say a method, yeah, so that one I haven't found elsewhere, and when I was writing that one this week, I was thinking, is this an appropriate place for it, and maybe it's not, but it is what one of the other...
Okay.
Not affected parties, but other submitters is asked for.
Okay, look, so sometimes we get planning evidence that's a very precise preference of the planner that provisions be in a certain way in a certain place. The answers you've given me have suggested to me that these are the issues that need to be covered, but so far you've indicated a bit of comfort that if we felt some of them should be moved to rules or otherwise, you're not really indicating any opposition to that. Have I got that right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, no, look, that's fine. It's helpful to know that from your perspective, this is what has to be dealt to.
Yeah.
And there might be a few ways to cut the cloth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think there would be two other ways of doing it, and it's just what would fit in with the decisions the panel makes.
Okay, I've got no other questions.
Well, in terms of those provisions, I'm assuming that given a bit of carte blanche, you accept there's a reasonable difference between not visible and reasonably inconspicuous. Not visible is not visible, reasonably inconspicuous.
Yes. Yeah.
So that follows on from Commissioner Monroe's point about these are the points that we feel need to be addressed, so how we actually get scripted if we were to go down that path is something that would be
important. Yeah, and that's actually why I mentioned that wording there about reasonably inconspicuous, because if these provisions are to cover the three areas, area 1, 3 and 4, then on areas 3 and 4 it's not possible for the houses to be not visible from across the valley.
And similarly, there's appropriately located buildings, and that's where I would suggest that the lawyers end up making a dollar or two, because some of my definition of appropriate might be slightly different to you, that would be something that you could look at.
Yes, I guess that's where this is more a policy, where policy is not as exact as rules.
Yep.
But appropriately located, I would think once you read, you took the other policies, it doesn't have the wording. It basically means the rear of the terrace.
Thank you. Any other questions on that?
Going back to your text on Area 1, Kelly, the reasoning in your paragraph 23 might be considered a rhetorical question, but I'll ask it anyway. That you said, well, it'd be too hard to consent if it was a rural zone. I suppose my question is, if we're going to rezone it, shouldn't we have the same level of comfort about the appropriateness of the end result as would in a resource consent under a rural zone, or a same level of comfort at least that an acceptable outcome is feasible under the rules?
The answer to the question is yes. I guess it relates to a rural lifestyle zone. The O&Ls don't apply. It probably comes back down to that basic concept, whereas if it's, that zone's not there, then you have to apply for a consent and the O&L has to be considered. That's one of the biggest hurdles, I think.
But if we don't accept your argument on the placement of the O&L line, we're talking hypotheticals here, then we need to consider the rezoning application in the light of it being an O&L. Chicken egg, which one do we figure out first?
Or whether the recommended provisions are sufficient to mitigate the issues with landscape views and visual amenity.
And my last point is on paragraph 27, you're talking the costs of maintaining a private road. If you have 20 lots up there, in terms of the council standards, wouldn't it need to be a public road?
That is one detail that I wasn't sure of, whether it's compulsory when you go over 6 lots for
for it to become a council road, or can the developer still nominate and say, I'll look after the road? Or it becomes an agreement, say a body corporate group for those property owners, and it's part of a consent notice?
Well, in that case, we'll just add that to Mr. Barr's list of tasks, because he's got an even longer list than yours, to advise us in the fullness of time what those rules are. But perhaps we should crack on to Area 3. I'm conscious of the time.
Yeah, so with the other three areas, the other two areas, Area 3 and Area 4, what I have here is mainly, in my paragraphs, is mainly a description of how where they are, how they can be developed, but the provisions are the same. So is there any questions on what's there?
Any questions?
No. We're running short of time.
The test about three or four?
No.
No one knows? Should we talk about the O&L line then?
Right. Yeah. Now, for the O&L part of our summary, I relied on the panel having what the evidence that I submitted for on April 4th this year.
Yep. All good.
And that has the plans from Anne Stevens' plan, for instance. So
you can take that as a given.
Okay, we
understand the point that there are as many opinions, well, virtually as many opinions as there are landscape architects.
Right. Okay. And therefore, our point two, that we considered to have a landscape architect given an opinion, and so whether that opinion would be the same as one of the ones that's already expressed or a different one, I don't think it would help the issue that we are highlighting here, in that there is a lot of different views on where the ONL lies on Lake Mackay Station.
Now, accepting that there are multiple landscape architect opinions, Ms. Melsoff referred us to an Environment Court decision on Bald Hills, almost directly to the east of Lake Mackay Station, where the court found that the O&L came down below the 580 metre contour that you've identified, and in the totem pole of relevant considerations, the court's view is of rather more moment to us than a conflict between the landscape architects. So I want to give you the opportunity to respond to that. Do you think are you familiar with the case, and are you able to assist us, basically? It'd be a bold call for us to say that the Environment Court was wrong. Is that what you're suggesting to us?
So the Environment Court there, I actually haven't read the details of that case, so I'm not sure what contour level the ONL was set on that one. Is it where Marion Reed's one started from?
It's, I think rather than have a dispute, like if you look on the website, we asked Helen Melsoff to give us a plan as to where the Bald Hills development was, and it's not right down to the floor of the valley, but it's certainly below the 580 metre contour. But if you haven't read it, I don't think there's any.
No.
I think you probably can't assist us. But you should be aware that it's around.
Yeah.
And we'll be thinking about it. Any other questions? Commissioner McLeod.
Yeah, thank you.
I have nothing else, but if you have any final thoughts to share with us, now's the time.
So the plans that I presented there are showing the ONL and the CODC area.
Yes.
Is it clear what...
The plan's actually very helpful because Ms. Nelson described to us that the... she gave us... We asked her for a copy of the where the CODC line was on the other side of the boundary, but she said it didn't follow that contour. So, from my perspective, it's really helpful that you've given us this additional information. Is everybody clear to me?
Yeah, because I did listen to that recording, the recording of the interview with Helen Smelsop there, and yeah, that's where I thought, well. In her case, she said at that time, I mean, she said it was higher, and it was because of those going around those two subdivisions, being the Queensbury one and Pukerangi Drive. But when you look at the whole side of the east side of the Pizer Range, it does really follow this change in landform that we think is the line of the ONL.
Which closely follows that 560.
No, it actually drops down in the area of Queensbury. It drops down to around 360, so that's the yellow contour line on the map. And then when you get in the area of Mount Pizer Station, it actually rises again. But I believe it's following that landform between the terraced lands and the foothills, Pizer Range.
I would say that that's very helpful to put it on a contour map. We were discussing that before you came, puzzling over it. And yes, sir. Any more?
So the only other comment I have, and I actually didn't write this, but in considering ONLs, I begin to think that maybe an ONL is where you wouldn't put a pivot irrigator. When you think through that, it's like a lot. It excludes a lot of the areas that could be farmed more intensively and therefore do change the landscape. But where it would stay as an outstanding natural landscape is somewhere that you wouldn't put a pivot irrigator, partly because it's too high or it's too hilly, too steep.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly and Mr. Harvey. And we appreciate you coming to see us and contributing to the plan process.
Thank you.
So I'm sure we'll give careful consideration to what you've said.
Okay. Thanks for hearing us.
Thank you. And so we'll adjourn back at 2:00.